This is Fresh Air. Although Pablo Medina fled from Cuba with his family after the Communist Revolution in 1960, he has never left his homeland emotionally. As a writer, poet, and translator, Cuba and family have been the focus of much of his writing. He has two books of poetry, Pork Rind and Cuban Songs, and Arching into the Afterlife, and a memoir, Exob Memories, A Cuban Childhood. Medina's first novel, The Marks of Birth, takes place in an unnamed Caribbean island. It follows the life of Felicia Turner, the matriarch of a close-knit family. Many of them leave this island for El Norte, the United States, after a revolution. Since this novel mirrors a lot of what happened to Medina's own family, I asked him what they hoped revolution would bring to Cuba in the late 1950s.
My family was middle class, and as members of that class, they were very much interested in ending corruption, in establishing a democratic government, and in living a sort of a calm, peaceful life, which was not quite what was happening, certainly after 1956 in Havana of those days. It was a very uncertain place and a very anxious place because you never knew when you would find a political demonstration on the street or a shootout or a bomb going off and so on and so forth. So they wanted it into that. Above all, they wanted it into the corruption that they saw was undermining the fabric of Cuban society.
So when Castro overthrew the Batista government, did your family celebrate?
Oh, of course. We spent about a week celebrating and partying and driving to and fro throughout the city, watching the rebels come in and buying mementos of the revolution and so on. So it was a great, great time. It was just a great party that was going on, and we were all very happy that the rebels had defeated Batista and that Batista was out of the island.
In the novel, the little boy, Anton, he attends school, and after the revolution, he comes home and he tells his parents about a course called political awareness, and there's certain catchphrases, one, the struggle of the proletariat, the curse of capitalism. His parents begin to worry. Were your parents worried about the turn the revolution took?
Yes, they were. You must understand for the Cuban middle class, as for the middle class in just about any Western country, communism was the boogeyman. Communism was the big, ugly creature that was just kind of stalking us in the island. And so when all these phrases and all these statements were made both in classrooms and over TV and in political speeches, people started worrying. Many of them decided that it was better to leave the island than to be exposed to the possibility of communism.
Your family left Cuba in 1960. Was there a certain event that forced their decision?
No, there were just a series of events, such as a number of people from the militia coming to our house and taking inventory of the all the furniture, and people coming to the door and asking questions about my father and so on and so forth. So that made us feel quite uncomfortable, and my parents were afraid that at any moment something bad would happen.
What did they want to know about your father?
They wanted to know things like where he worked and who he associated with, who his friends were, basically. Nothing specific. You know, they wouldn't ask questions like, was he involved in the counter-revolutionary activity? They wouldn't be that obvious. But they were just kind of asking. And that was rather disturbing, particularly since it never really happened before.
Was he a critic of the new government?
By this point, he had changed his mind, although he was a supporter at first, as was my mother.
In your story, I know, or your own story, your family left by airplane. Do you remember that day? Do you remember leaving? And you were 12 years old?
Absolutely. I remembered it as if it were yesterday. It was that kind of day. You were leaving behind a whole life, and you were coming to the United States, which was also very exciting.
Well, Anton, your character in the novel, who's leaving with his family and to go to El Norte, to America, he can only take a few things. He takes a book and a baseball glove.
Mm-hmm.
I assume you could only take a few things.
Yeah.
Do you remember what you took?
I brought a book, as a matter of fact. Not a book that I was particularly close to, but it was a book. As I recall, it was a book by Will Durant.
Hmm.
And I don't know why I picked that book of all the books that I might have brought. It's still a mystery to me.
And that's the only thing you took?
Other than, we were allowed clothes, a bag of clothes, which we, of course, brought. As I recall, that's all I brought.
Well, I want to have you read another section from your novel. And this is about Anton. They're getting ready to leave this Caribbean island to go to America.
Okay. Later, while his parents were sleeping on the bed next to him, Anton tried to think what lay ahead. He wanted grand avenues and skyscrapers, bridges and factories. He wanted America in all its industrial power, its democratic arrogance and Wild West roughness. He wanted Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday, Billy the Kid and the James Brothers, Elliot Ness, Al Capone, Babyface Nelson, Mickey Mantle, and Warren Spahn. He wanted right and wrong to do battle out in the open where he could see them. He wanted a baseball white and hard and perfect to come flying in his direction so he could catch it and save the game. It was the early 60s, and he was in the country where all of this was possible. He knew it from the movies and from television, Key West and its sad streets notwithstanding. He knew it, too, from some place inside him neither his parents nor his grandmother had ever touched. El Norte was the way into the pure self.
What do you mean by that, El Norte was the way into the pure self?
Well, I meant it in the sense that in this island where he is coming from, Anton is fixed in a web where the self matters in relation to the family, to the extended family. But it seems to me, and this perhaps is something that I sort of injected into Anton himself, that in this North American society, there's less of that. There's less of a web, of a family web that holds you. And so one is driven to seek out one's own internal mechanism, which most people call the self, whatever that is. And I think the United States is a place where this can happen. It's much more difficult to do in a country where the self is constantly being modified and driven and sometimes limited by the web of family.
Well, I want to talk some more, but let's just take a short break first. And our guest on Fresh Air today is Pablo Medina, and his latest book is a novel. It's his first novel. It's called The Marks of Birth. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Pablo Medina is our guest. He's a writer, essayist, poet, and now a novelist. His first novel is just written. It's called The Marks of Birth. Well, we're kind of going back and forth between your novel and your life, but let me just talk a little bit about what it was like for you to come to the United States in 1960. You were 12 years old. First of all, how good was your English?
It was fairly good, I was very fortunate that way. I attended, I think my parents had the foresight to send me and my sister to bilingual schools in Cuba. It gave us a great education, and it also taught us language in a general sense, and in a more particular sense, it taught us English. So by the time we came here, we were fairly fluent. We just needed to get used to the language of the everyday, the language of the streets, so to speak.
What was your neighborhood like? You lived in New York City?
Yeah. At first, for almost a year, we lived in Manhattan, and it was just a regular neighborhood. I say that and realize now that it was a rather fancy neighborhood. We were housed in a very expensive residential hotel. right off a couple of blocks away from Fifth Avenue.
How'd you manage that?
Well, my father worked for a Spanish company, and they were gracious enough to pay for this hotel, though we were very poor. We just didn't have very much money for anything, but we certainly lived very nicely.
Well, you said you knew English. Did you feel that you fit in?
One always thinks at the moment that one fits in. In retrospect, of course, the story is very different. We did not fit in, and one can say that the whole history of our struggle, as well as the struggle of any exile, I think, is an attempt to reconcile one's past with one's present. And sometimes that's impossible.
Well, especially if you're cut off from your past the way you were.
Exactly. If that happens, it is very difficult to bring them together, so to speak.
But you didn't realize that back then, and I guess what 12-year-old would?
No, of course not. One tried to survive. One tried to thrive, if possible. One tried to wear all the masks that are necessary for survival. And I did. I did as best I could.
So you look like a regular American kid, so to speak?
Yeah, until I mentioned my name.
Well, what was the reaction when you mentioned your name?
Well, usually there would be some comment as to my background and where I was from and so on, and people would then try their Spanish on me, like, hola, ¿qué tal?
When did you begin to write?
Well, it's hard to answer that question in the sense that I always wrote. A better question would be, when did I start considering myself a writer?
Mm-hmm.
And that happened in college. It happened, I remember one time, I was a biology major in college, pre-med. And I was studying for an organic chemistry exam. At the same time, I was also taking a graduate seminar in Don Quixote.
Huh.
And there was the night before this big exam, I placed my organic chemistry textbook on the left of me and Don Quixote to the right of me. And I asked myself a question, what do you really want to do? Read Don Quixote or read organic chemistry? And of course, I read Don Quixote and failed the organic chemistry exam miserably, and the rest is history.
And you never looked back?
I never had any regrets? I have never had any regrets. The only, I've always been intrigued by medicine, and I've always liked that field. But I'm glad I'm not a doctor. I'm very happy to be a writer.
You live in Miami now, is that right?
Yes, though not for long, but I will. I have been living there for 2 years.
And there's certainly a large Cuban community there.
Very much so.
Does that feel like home then for you? Are there the kinds of sounds and smells and foods that make it feel like home?
Yes, there are all those sounds and smells. But let me tell you something. I moved to Miami thinking that for the first time in my life I would be in the majority and that I wouldn't feel like a foreigner. Well, I moved to Miami, and indeed, I was in the majority, and I have felt more of a foreigner there than I ever did.
What about for your child or your children? You mentioned your son. I don't know if you have other children as well.
I have one son.
One son. Mm-hmm. You said you feel like a foreigner in Miami. How does he feel?
Well, I think he probably feels a foreigner, but for very, very different reasons. He was born in this country, and he's very, very much an American, though, of course, he speaks both languages and speaks them well. And of late, he's sort of become very very interested in his Hispanic background. So, but that even proves that he feels foreign to that culture. The fact that he's interested in it is something he wants to get into.
Yeah. Well, does that surprise you at all, or is it interesting to watch him try to make sense of these dual cultures?
Oh, I love it, and I see him growing in that direction, and it's very good. You know, growth is very important in any direction you go in, and he happens to be going in a direction that pleases me as a father.
Well, I thank you, Pablo Medina, for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Thank you, Marty. It's been a pleasure.
Pablo Medina's novel is called The Marks of Birth. This is Fresh Air.